At the rear of our amphitheater, there's a plaque you may have noticed. It commemorates Paul Palmer, an early member of this congregation. It has a quote from the English poet Alexander Pope. "Know then thyself, seek not God to scan. The proper study of mankind is man." Pope used man in the old sense to mean humanity, and though it wasn't called that then, his poem is an ode to humanism, focusing not on God, but on humanity. Paul Palmer was a humanist. You may know he left his house to the fellowship when he died, and the money from selling the house was used for campus improvements. Our library is called Palmer Library, and there's a picture of Paul inside next to the endowment wall. I know Paul Palmer was a humanist, not just from the plaque in our amphitheater. When I was congregational secretary, I was going through files, and I came upon his letter of instruction for his legacy. He made only one request about honoring his legacy. At least one Sunday a year, the sermon should be explicitly dedicated to humanism. So here goes. I want to raise a version of the big question that we humans have debated endlessly in our history. What is our moral duty as human beings? Or put another way, why are we here? This is a tough question for me because I come at it from an atheistic viewpoint. I accept there is no supernatural force at work in the universe like God or gods or like a spirit of life, or in fact, anything to supply moral answers outside of the human beings who happen to run this planet. I grew up in a fairly religious family, affiliated with a liberal Christian denomination, the United Church of Christ, or Congregationalists in New England. And I recall very clearly, in some youth group that I was attending, we were assigned some essay or thought experiment about why I love God. And I pretty much knew, sitting right there, that I didn't love God, that it all seemed like hooey to me, and that if anyone was going to be in charge of guiding my life, it was myself and the people who loved me and the people who hated me. And ever since, I have wondered how to be a moral and righteous and just individual. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is famous for saying, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." Of course, as we know, he drew that image from the words of a prominent Unitarian, the Reverend Theodore Parker, who was talking about slavery in 1853. And I think, as UUs, we have claim to contributing to the bending of that arc. But during my life, I haven't been able to stop thinking this thought. Why is something moral? What is the justice we're trying to attain? We can say these answers are self-evident, that all people are created equal, that human rights are, if not God-given, at least good rights to have and protect. In fact, one of the sources of UUism, as codified by the UU Association, is that we draw from direct experience of that transcending mystery which moves us. But for me, saying it's self-evident doesn't really answer the question of why something is moral. In my lifetime, being gay has gone from being a criminal offense that ruined lives. The famous computer scientist Alan Turing killed himself after being convicted, to being almost a completely normal part of life, love, and marriage. Was that a change in mores and laws, or was it a change in the very fabric of what's moral? Likewise, treatment of other life on this planet, particularly animals, has been moving toward a recognition of speciesism and moral limits on the exploitation of other animals by human animals. Where does that come from? Well, I think I'm approaching an answer to my question of why something is moral. It's an answer grounded in a radical humanism. The humanism that says it's all up to us, humans, first and last, to decide and define what's moral, and then to bend the arc of the universe toward it. Harvard professor Steven Pinker, in his book Enlightenment Now, says, "It is humanism that identifies what we should try to achieve with our knowledge. It provides the ought that supplements the is." Another source of UU principles comes from humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. To cut to the chase here, my surprising answer is that there is a God, or gods, after all, and it is us. And it is entirely up to us whether we will be gods of mercy and justice or gods of destruction and revenge. Maybe that's a metaphor, but it's pretty close to the truth. Humans are the only ones to write poetry, the only ones to invent slavery and then abolish it, or manipulate atomic fission and then blow things up with it, and then agree, or at least try to agree, not to do that anymore, or to look upon others suffering from disease and then develop vaccines and antibiotics to stop it. Of course, other beings on Earth share some of our emotional range, and some use tools and communicate. But a chimp using a twig to catch ants isn't remotely comparable in any practical sense to a human robotics engineer programming a robot to make Teslas. There's a common trope in atheist writings that goes something like this: "Who needs a God to drive us to our knees in awe, when the universe is so vast and so many galaxies remind us of our insignificance? That's enough awe for any atheist." It's a continuation of the demotion of humanity since the beginning of the scientific age. We started in the Garden of Eden, where we were the center of all creation. Then Copernicus and Galileo demoted us to the third planet circling the sun. Then Hubble placed us in the hinterlands of the Milky Way galaxy, which we now know is just a mediocre galaxy among many, many others. Well, I'm more comfortable with us back at the center of things. As far as we know, there's nothing and nobody out there that's smarter, more creative, more dangerous, or more moral or immoral than humanity. SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, has spent a long time looking for alien intelligence, and so far, no dice. It's called the Fermi paradox. The universe is unutterably vast, and the Big Bang was over 13 billion years ago. Where is everybody else? Maybe there's somebody out there, but maybe not. And for sure, there's nobody like us in this corner of the universe. Perhaps paradoxically, I find this hugely comforting. The notion that we are the masters of our fate in a universal cosmological sense, and indeed pretty much the masters of the fate of everything, is a pretty big canvas for us to paint upon. The historian Noah Yuval Harari wrote a book called Homo Deus, God Man. It's what Homo sapiens becomes when we can do magic and gain divine power. Because by all measures of traditional religion, we are already gods. As the science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke said, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. We can see the whole world. We can cast our voice anywhere. We can fly. We can say, 'Let there be light,' and there is light. We are divine." Harari makes the point that our divinity, like everything else we do, is up to us to define and decide. Right now, we're pretty much like the Greek or Scandinavian gods. We have supernatural powers grafted onto some fairly petty personalities. As quick to anger as Zeus or Odin, as vengeful as Hera, as duplicitous as Loki, as bloody as Mars or Thor, as capricious as Apollo. When Robert Oppenheimer saw the explosion of the atomic bomb he created, he said we had become Vishnu. Now I am become death, destroyer of worlds. And it's true. If we want, we can destroy the world. Geologists are contemplating giving humans a geological era all of our own because our impact on the planet is as great as any ice age or giant meteor strike or volcanic event. So if there's a God, it's us. The question is, what kind of God shall we be? There's a burgeoning scientific inquiry into the origins of goodness, or altruism as it's called in science, and the origins of malevolence. Why are human beings altruistic? Why do they extend themselves for the benefit of other human beings? Is it some kind of extended kinship relationship to pass on their genes? Is it some kind of calculated selfishness of you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back? Is it something else? And conversely, when we're bad, why are we so, so bad? My feeling is, whatever evolutionary or biological imperatives we're bucking that drive us toward malice, we can transcend them. We can choose to be good. As Katharine Hepburn said to Humphrey Bogart in The African Queen, "Nature, Mr. Allnut, is what we are put in this world to rise above." And we, as humans, haven't been completely bad. Think of the utilitarian progress that humans have made, the number of deaths in wars that have gone down, the improved health and longevity, the abolition of human chattel bondage, the unbelievable prosperity generated by industrial and market societies. Say what you will about the Chinese government, and there is an awful lot to say. They have lifted 400 million people from poverty to middle-class status in the last 40 years. In my moral calculus, that much is incredibly beneficial. Perhaps if the striving to be gods metaphor sounds a bit rich, we can step down a notch to angels and reach toward what Abe Lincoln in his second inaugural address called the better angels of our nature. I don't think there's any question, as a UU, I must do my part to first define and decide what is just, and then fight for it against the many competing views that humans have. I may be pretty sure that subjugation of women is monstrously unjust, but many people don't understand that yet. Sometimes, a few times in my life, these better angels have called out to me, and I have known I faced a moral imperative. Right here, right now, I'm called upon to do the right thing, even if it imposes costs and closes doors. In retrospect, one of the proudest moments of my professional life as a lawyer turns out to be that I had the honor of pissing off my boss, Bill Barr, who is now Attorney General. And getting fired by him because I insisted that the law must protect the privacy of citizens' personal phone calls. Recently, I found an old file among my late father's papers. It was the application I wrote in 1969 to be deferred from the Vietnam War draft as a conscientious objector. At first, I was reluctant and even ashamed to pick it up and reread it. I was afraid I would find in my 20-year-old self a self-serving hypocrite trying to get out of a sticky situation by claiming to have the moral equivalent of bone spurs. But eventually I read it, and to my surprise, it reflected some of the themes we've been talking about here. Yes, to a degree, it was mixed with self-interest and hypocrisy. But listen to the humanism expressed in this paragraph I wrote back then, even down to the usage of man in its old sense, meaning humanity. My objections to war and killing are the inevitable outgrowth of my beliefs in man as an independent being capable of doing objective good through his own volition. This view necessarily encompasses such attitudes as concern for the dignity of man, an ineluctable call to work for constructively for man's betterment, and the personal ethics which do not allow me to compromise on these cornerstone beliefs. So I think, as you use, we're doing just the right thing, caring about our own moral development, searching for it, exporting undeniable good to at least some other people. We are defining what kind of gods humanity may be. We hear in science fiction about benevolent and wise and astonishingly technologically advanced races. Well, that's us, or at least it could be. What if we were really as benevolent and kind as the New Testament Jesus? What if we renounced Vishnu? As Michael Brand wrote in the first edition of the Whole Earth Catalog in 1968, we are as gods, and we might as well get good at it. In the lifetime of some of us here, humanity will have to define and decide moral questions such as, do robots with artificial intelligence have moral rights? Do humans have the moral right to terraform Mars? Do humans owe reparations to the species we have decimated and exploited? Is it moral to genetically engineer some of us into superhumans? These questions will have to be decided by the moral decisions of individual people acting on the whole of society until that tipping point is reached where what seems obvious in one generation seems obviously wrong in the next. So I'm with Alexander Pope and Paul Palmer. The proper study of mankind is man, and how to deal with the burden of our increasing divinity. One way or another, we will have to decide what kind of gods we may be. May it be so.